August 1st, 1944, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. A 15-year-old boy stands at a window, grenade in hand, watching SS troops cross a courtyard below. He pulls the pin and throws. The explosion is deafening, though the soldiers escape unharmed. In that moment, Andrew Borowiak crosses a threshold he can never uncross. "I'll never be able to live back with my mother after this," he thinks, and he's right. This memoir, scribbled initially on Red Cross toilet paper in a German POW camp, has become required reading in military academies worldwide. What makes it extraordinary isn't just its historical significance, but its emotional honesty, a teenage boy's unfiltered perspective on war, resistance, and the violent theft of innocence. Andrew's childhood in Makau Podhalansky meant swimming in mountain rivers, exploring forests with his red setter Mick, and absorbing the culture of Poland's Gorale Highlanders. His father, a retired colonel, enjoyed relative privilege in pre-war Poland. But the Munich Agreement of 1938 foreshadowed Poland's fate. The nation had participated in carving up Czechoslovakia, only to face Germany's eastward aggression. War erupted September 1, 1939. Evacuated to Lvov, Andrew witnessed mobilization, troop trains, field kitchens, soldiers gathering. The dual German-Soviet invasion erased Poland from the map. His father made a desperate calculation, escaping Soviet territory for German occupation. The logic was grim. Germans might send officers to POW camps, Soviets would send them to Siberia or worse. The reunited family faced an unrecognizable existence, schools stripped of patriotic content, radios confiscated, constant fear of execution. His father's insistence Andrew learn German reflected pragmatic wisdom. They will lose the war, but their language will survive. By 1942, Andrew witnessed Makau's entire Jewish population deported to Belzec. One image seared his memory. Old Weiss, unable to walk, brought to the station in a wheelbarrow and casually shot by an SS officer. Shortly after, Andrew's father died from stroke, leaving a teenager alone in Nazi-occupied Poland. He moved to Krakow, working as a messenger at a furniture factory seized from its Jewish owner. The city served as German headquarters, streets renamed in German, Wehrmacht vehicles everywhere, a 6 p.m. curfew enforced with lethal efficiency. A Jewish worker gave Andrew a stamp collection before deportation, saying quietly, "I don't think I'll be needing them where I'm going." These moments revealed the occupation's true horror, not just violence, but the casual erasure of entire communities. Warsaw, where Andrew moved next, operated differently. In a city of a million, resistance could breathe. Within a week, he joined clandestine classes, groups of 10 students meeting in rotating locations, defying Nazi plans to deny Poles education beyond age 14. Then came April 1943, the Katyn revelation. 3,000 Polish officers found in mass graves, shot by Soviets in 1940, and the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Watching flames rise from the ghetto, someone in Andrew's classroom remarked, "If the Jews could do it, then so could we, and so much better." That summer, Andrew joined the gray ranks. Joining the Tsar Sheregi felt like entering an exclusive club. Andrew chose Zich as his nom de guerre, a Henrik Sienkiewicz character embodying the cynical old soldier he aspired to be. Early assignments were modest but dangerous, distributing underground news sheets and painting Katowice graffiti, the anchor symbol, merging P and W for Fighting Poland, which he could finish in under a minute while watching for patrols. By early 1944, training intensified, with weekly meetings covering pre-war infantry manuals, reconnaissance, attack, defense, withdrawal. They studied weapons through colored drawings and handled captured MP40s and Poland's Vis 9mm pistol. Field exercises near Zielonka involved formation marching, grenade drills with stones, and field medicine from Girl Scout medics, with the riskiest part being travel through Warsaw's central station, crawling with Gestapo. By July 1944, everything accelerated. The Red Army advanced rapidly, Wehrmacht's Army Group Center collapsed, and Moscow radio urged Warsaw to rise. Andrew received his red and white armband stamped WP, Wojsko Polskie, Polish Army. The mobilization order came. At 15, he would face war's full brutality. The uprising's opening hours brought mixed success. Polish forces captured the city center and old town, but failed to secure critical targets. Vistula bridges, airports, and Gestapo headquarters remained German-controlled. The weapons shortage was catastrophic. One 600-strong battalion fought with just 300 grenades, 30 pistols, 3 submachine guns, and 3 rifles. Yet Warsaw's citizens rallied completely, building barricades overnight and overturning tram cars as tank barriers. For the first time in 5 years, the Polish national anthem played publicly. The German response was genocidal. Heinrich Himmler deployed 2 brutal SS formations that massacred at least 10,000 civilians on the first day alone. By late August, the old town was besieged, 7,000 Polish fighters defending 100,000 civilians against 3,500 Germans with superior firepower. Andrew volunteered for a desperate mission, carrying dispatches through Warsaw's sewers. Selected for being short and skinny, he crawled with 4 other boys through 3-foot-high tunnels for 3 hours in absolute silence. Germans dropped grenades through manholes above. The old town he emerged into was devastated. Gutted buildings, rubble mountains, makeshift graves everywhere. Colonel Wachnowski eventually evacuated 4,500 people through the sewers, but 2,500 wounded were abandoned. Dirlewanger's men murdered them all in their hospital beds. After escaping Old Town, Andrew joined the depleted Zoska battalion reinforcing Cherniakov on the Vistula's west bank. On day 41, hope flickered when Red Army artillery erupted and General Berling's 1st Polish Army Corps attacked Praga. Soviet fighters reappeared, dropping supplies. But von dem Bock assembled overwhelming force. 4,000 men, 16 tanks, massive siege mortars, and remote-controlled Goliath mines. Against this stood 1,600 Polish fighters with limited ammunition. Andrew was promoted to Lance Corporal 10 days before his 16th birthday, a morale boost that worked wonderfully. House-to-house combat brought them dangerously close to Germans shouting, "Banditen, Hände hoch," while shooting through floorboards. None would surrender. Bandits couldn't expect military courtesies. One evening, Andrew spotted a Goliath moving across a vacant lot. His warnings met disbelief until the blast ripped through their cellar. As Soviet support faded, they evacuated through sewers to Mokotow. On September 24th, Andrew's 16th birthday, Germans launched their final attack. While defending an evacuation route, Andrew was wounded in his hand, leg, and below his right knee. Facing another sewer trip with paper-bandaged wounds exposed to filth and gangrene, he refused. "The Germans will kill you," warned a lieutenant. He didn't care. 16 years and 3 days old, wanting only to die in peace. After surrender, Germans called them Soldaten rather than Banditen, unprecedented recognition. No other partisans in Nazi-occupied Europe received Geneva Convention protection. Andrew was processed as a POW and transported to Stalag 11A. The 63-day uprising cost 200,000 civilian lives, 16,000 fighters imprisoned, and 42% of Warsaw destroyed. American tanks brought liberation in April 1945, but freedom proved illusory. Stalin kidnapped 16 Home Army leaders and tortured them in Moscow's Lubyanka prison. On July 6, 1945, the Anglo-Americans recognized Moscow's puppet regime over Poland's legitimate government in exile. Andrew briefly joined WIN, Freedom and Independence, and underwent parachute training, but his return to Poland became a fiasco. At the Soviet zone border, 3 companions were discovered and marched away at gunpoint. In Krakow, his WIN contact's apartment was sealed by citizens' militia. He fled immediately. By early 1946, Andrew's stepfather arranged their escape using false French permits and a smuggler's help. Andrew eventually settled in Britain, studied journalism at Columbia, and became a foreign correspondent. His last glimpse of Commander Radosław came on All Souls Day 1945 at Warsaw's Powązki Military Cemetery, where they defiantly sang the occupation-era anthem asking God to return our fatherland to freedom. Radosław died in 1988, just 2 years before Poland's true liberation. Andrew Borowek's noir reveals what ordinary people become when civilization collapses. These weren't professional soldiers, but teenagers who should have worried about exams and first loves, not surviving mortar barrages. What haunts most isn't the violence, but the normalcy surrounding it. Painting resistance symbols between homework, dating a German girl after liberation, singing patriotic songs while knowing your country has been sold to another empire. The Warsaw Uprising failed militarily, but succeeded in something deeper, proving some things matter more than survival.